Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast with Bhairav Patel and Alan Clark.
Welcome to the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast, where we tackle the practical challenges that startup founders and small business owners face and give our own unvarnished opinions. My name is Bhairav Patel. I'm the Managing Director at Atom Ventures and Atom CTO, where we partner with small businesses and startup founders to help them define and build their tech vision.
And I'm Alan Clark. I'm the founder of the Business Growth Partnership, and we work with high potential businesses to help them unblock the blockages that are preventing them from reaching their full potential. Well, today we're going to have a chat about pitch decks and the value that a pitch deck brings both to you and for you using it to engage with other parties. So, Bhairav, tell me about your experience with pitching and the use of pitch decks.
One of my previous businesses, we raised $12 million back in 2012, right? And that was raised not on a pitch deck, but on a PDF. Basically, it was like a document. I think it was about 10-page, almost like a white paper like you have in the blockchain world. It was a document that was sent around to a number of investors, and they ended up putting $12 million in, right? Which I think is very interesting, because I remember reading back on that whole thing broke all the rules. Because nowadays, you have all these rules around pitch decks that they've got to be short, they've got to be to the point, et cetera, right? Whereas this was just a kind of flamboyant 20-page document.
Was it a pitch deck, or was it a narrative business plan?
It was pretty much a narrative business plan, right? It was actually saying, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to do it, this is what we're going to make, how we're going to make money.
And you managed to capture all of that in 20 pages of writing.
Yeah. I mean, I can't remember how many pages it was, but it was around that. And I think a lot of what you see in the blockchain space now is very similar. So you'll see companies with white papers, and you go to the website and they'll have a white paper, and those are ranging between, like, I don't know, 12 and 35 pages, right? So it's a very similar thing. And it was very different back then, because people wanted to know, do you have a business, right? Like, how are you going to run your business? Whereas nowadays, I think everything has become a little bit less detailed. Let's put it that way, right? Where you are not like the key advice is not to write 50 pages for a presentation. And this is where I'm rambling here a little bit. But when we were raising our 30 to 45 million as part of that business, what we did was we actually created our pitch deck was, if I look back at it now, it's about 35 slides, right? Which is not what the advice is at the moment. It's not to go and give a much more in-depth piece, because the way that people talk about pitch decks at the moment is that they have to be something that's eye-catching, that's very to the point and very essentially succinct. And back then, when you're trying to, and I kind of agree with it, but I kind of also don't disagree with it. I think that if you're someone who's looking to put a significant amount of money into a business, a 10-slide pitch deck is not really going to cut it, right? You really want to be able to have a conversation with the people who are putting the money in. And I think this is my first point about this whole thing, is that a pitch deck is not the thing that's going to get you the money, right? You giving a pitch deck to someone is not what is going to get you the cash. The pitch deck is just actually something that promotes interest in the person who you are seeking money from, right? It's not about that. You'll never seal the deal. You'll never have a perfect pitch deck, which will just, people just shower money at you.
Absolutely. We did almost exactly the same raise 1 year after you. We did it in 2013. And it's interesting that you did the more detailed document and then worked that back to the briefer document later on. We actually had three different documents. One was a full detailed, well, we had all the financial numbers, which for me is what I call business plan financials. But the other document was a business plan narrative, which actually explained how we saw this all working and how we would deliver it. And we actually hired a firm of corporate finance experts to help us write that. Ask them to help us write it. We asked them to write it for us. And their first draft was about 100 pages. And I read it and went, I don't understand what we're doing anymore. having read this. And we didn't. And it was actually very helpful going through that exercise. But I then took on that task and said, nobody can write our story better than we can write it. So why don't I write our story? And I wrote the long version of it in about 40 pages. And it wasn't everything. You can't write the entire story of your business. You can never write it. Even if it was War and Peace, it would still be missing large chunks. And if we looked at that, we said, nobody's ever going to read that. So we condensed it down into about 8 pages, which said, see full document for more details continually throughout it. And then we said, well, we can't go in and meet anybody and read an 8-page document to them. So what we did then was we condensed it into a handful of slides and then also brought the 8-pager to the meeting as well and said, if what our meeting doesn't tickle your fancy, and if on the cab on the way home you've flipped through the 8 pages and you want to know more, there's a longer version available to you as well. So interestingly, we did kind of the same thing, but different ways around at the same time.
I agree. So my question to you is, do you invest in businesses?
Personally?
Yeah.
No.
Right. So I do. And I think when I talk to companies about their pitch decks and how they promote themselves, for me, I always talk about the things that turn me off rather than the things I'm actually interested in. Because one of the key things I find when it comes to pitch decks is that if you haven't put any love and attention into your pitch deck, so it doesn't look good, the spelling's off, that doesn't flow, doesn't tell me the story, then why should I show interest in your business, right? And I think one of the key things, and I always tell this to anyone who's writing a pitch deck, anyone who tries to, who asks me for investment or whatever it is, right? I always say to them, well, if you can't show your love for your own business, why the hell should I show you any love for your business, right?
Well, I think this is now where, and hopefully this is going to be a productive session in terms of anyone's listening in that wants to write a pitch deck, we will help them by the end of this chat have a plan for how to do it. But I think what you described there perfectly is one of my greatest frustrations when I meet businesses and I say, tell me what you do. And they yap, 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 yap. And then 20 minutes later, they stop talking and I say, so what is it you actually do?
It's true, yeah.
That was loads of stuff, but I don't really understand what it is you do. And I think you're right. You're right. That if your pitch deck has got spelling mistakes, it rings a massive alarm bell off. Will they actually make sure the accounts are correct?
Exactly.
If they can't even get the spelling right. If it looks like a mess, their business organisationally will probably be a mess.
Simple things, right? If you can't spend a few hundred pounds to go and get someone to make it look pretty, then how can I trust?
Fiver?
Yeah, well, fiver, whatever it is, right? If you can't do that, how can I trust you with my money? Right? How can I trust that you are going to do good things with my money and not just going to waste it on me?
I think that's two important elements. You know, that is immediate gross negatives if you get wrong. But actually, and this for me is the entire nub of why a pitch deck is valuable and why it is important that every business, even if you're not seeking money, you have your own pitch deck. And that is all about distilling your big idea into a few extremely focused, frankly, strategic slides that explain what the opportunity is, why you're going to be able to take advantage of that, and how you're going to do that.
So my analogy is always board meetings. And I know that most entrepreneurs or people listening to this may not have ever presented to a big board, right? But I know that you have, and I have. And what I remember from my very first presentation to a board, which was the board of a large private e-commerce business I was working for, right? The first feedback I got was that there's too many words. I need pictures because, and then I came up with this whole thing, which is essentially saying that imagine that you are describing your business or what you're doing to a 5-year-old, right? And make it like a Tonka toy presentation. Lots of pretty colors, lots of, lots of images, and not overloading it with acronyms or too much detail, because people, that's what, you know, most people who are looking at your pitch deck, they don't have very much time, right? And they need to absorb a lot in a very small amount of time.
Well, and that picks up on your point about, you know, personally, I don't invest, but I spend a lot of time, and I have spent a lot of time working with investors who do invest, and working with companies and having a company that sought investment. And the absolute bottom line from all of that was keep it simple. And actually, you know, it is what you're saying there, you know, would my 5-year-old understand what you're trying to say here? And if they don't, it's too complex. And that can be a huge issue for anybody that is deep dived into business and say, but it's not simple. It is actually really complicated. But all the brilliant people I've worked with have been able to explain their business really, really simply. And sure, after that, it becomes the challenge of doing it is not simple. But the fundamental of what it is we do and how we address that issue is can always be explained in very simple terms.
Exactly. So, I mean, okay, we can go into what the different slides are, but essentially, right, you're asking what is the problem, what's the solution, and why am I the one to actually solve this problem, right? And that's what you're trying to say. And I think what people, you know, I get pitch decks coming to me which are like 20, 30 pages long, and really that's, you know, I get lost because when I see something and I open up and it's 30 pages, I'm like, I can't bother to read this. I just need something that's going to tell me in about 3 or 4 slides or maybe 10 slides maximum what it is that I want to put my money towards. And I think a lot of people get, you know, they got caught up in their own storytelling, right? In their own narrative, which is fine, but you've got to be very succinct. You've got to put yourself in the shoes of the person listening, because, you know, we're going through a fundraise at the moment where we're looking to raise, and we've raised 1.4 million, and we're looking to raise another 1.5 million. And I can tell you that every single investor we talk to cares about one slide, right? And that's about the economics of the business. They don't give a shit about anything else. They care about that one slide. So I can, you know, we've taken our original pitch deck of, you know, 10 slides down to 3, because no one cares about the rest of it. Every conversation we have is about the economics of the business, right? Well, and that's the nature of the company that we're
working. I would just say that I get that in that world of blockchain where you're working with sophisticated investors who are less concerned about, and how are you going to invent or create that bit of technology or that service that makes your customers' lives better? They're taking an educated gamble on a financial model. So I think that is a bit of an outlier for what most of our listeners would be thinking about, where for me, it really does come down to, what is the big issue? How do you make people's lives better? And what I'd like to chat through now, and you know, this isn't mine. This is absolutely borrowed from a guy called Guy Kawasaki. And rather than us trying, or me trying to put anything up on the website saying, here is how to do all of this, just Google Guy Kawasaki, 10 slide pitch deck, and you'll get from his own mouth how he sees all of this working. But in the absence of that, let us just chat you through how he sees the perfect pitch deck working. It's got to be said that his view on it is primarily built around raising investment for a tech company. But the principles are exactly the same. Now, I have a Kawasaki pitch deck for my little one-man consultancy business. Because the questions they ask, if you can't answer, you haven't really got a well thought through and considered business. And that comes back to my first point, is that I believe the primary reason for developing a pitch deck is to allow you to check that your thinking is robust. Because if you can't convert your business into a 10-slide pitch deck that you think tells the story really well, there's gaps in your thinking that need filled before you go any further with what you're doing now.
100%. And so when you're looking at that, I've actually added, I mean, I believe in that pitch deck. I believe in that methodology myself. But one thing I would add actually that he doesn't have, which we can get onto, is sustainability. Because one of the key things at the moment that is hot for most investors is sustainability. And he doesn't really talk about that, but actually that's something that you should always focus on. So let's go into the first slide. So which is essentially for me, not necessarily what Guy Kawasaki talks about, but it's actually the executive summary, right? I always think you should start with a summary of what you do in a nutshell, and you should put your ask in that at the very beginning. Because one of the things that a lot of people do is they'll bombard you with X number of slides, and then they'll put at the very end what they want. And I think actually what you want to do is put your ask in at the very front, because then actually it's a bonus for people who are reading it, right? They'll be able to know quite quickly, this is something I can invest in, this is something I can't invest in.
But remember, I think that I agree with you. You're absolutely right when you're going for investment. But you have a pitch deck that isn't always about going for investment.
True.
But having your ask at the beginning allows whoever your engagement, you know, for me, it might be a new business situation. But they say, come in and tell me about what you do. And I'll have my little deck ready to run through. And at the beginning, I might simply have on that my ask is, I want to help you improve how your customers work. Or, I want to join your roster of consultants. Or, I want whatever it is you want out of it. Because there's one thing that pisses everybody off is, so, what is it you really want out of this?
Mm.
You know, let's be clear, because if it's not on the table, there's no scope for agreement. We might as well identify that really early on and not waste anybody's time.
So after the executive summary, what's the next thing someone should write?
Well, the first thing, it all starts with, what is the issue that you address? What is the big problem, the pain that your business will alleviate? And what you're really wanting to do in that slide is immediately start off on common ground with whoever you're presenting to or meeting with, say, yeah, I recognize that. That is a real meaningful issue. And actually, it would be worth addressing that problem. That would make my life better. That would make my customer's life better.
I think one of the things that for me, it's why should I care, right? Why should I care about this particular problem? And I think that's what you could throw numbers around, which is great, but you've got to really try and engage the person reading and just to get them essentially emotionally involved in what you're doing. And I think that's the key. So the second thing, once you've defined your problem, is you got to define the solution.
Absolutely. Straight off. Don't mess about. Tell me how you solve that problem.
And it's really about, and I, again, don't use acronyms, right? Don't go into jargon. Be very clear, very specific language, right? Don't try and overcomplicate the language as to what it is that you're doing and how you're solving the problem. And what I like on these kinds of slides is that I like it visually when someone presents the problem and directly shows me the solution that they have. So you can define the problem and you can actually show exactly why your solution fixes that problem. And I think if you can have that like one-to-one almost, solution problem definition, that becomes much more powerful to people. It's rather than trying to say, oh yes, I want to make 100 million older people better off, and then just saying, oh, I'll do an assessment on them. That's not, you know, maybe what you're doing is it's valid, but actually it's not the how you're solving the problem, and you
well,
need
let me
to show
just
that.
Give an example of my business. So when I meet someone and use this format, what's the problem? The problem that most people nod along and agree to and say, I totally understand that, is that lots of small and medium-sized businesses face blockages that they don't know how to get by that are preventing them reaching their full potential. But I don't mind explaining what those blockages are, why they're important. But by that point, I've usually got the person on the other side nodding along. And then I immediately move in, so how do I help address that? And how I address that, I've been 30 years experience, hands-on working in business strategy, marketing and operations to help them find solutions. And if they're nodding along at that point and saying, well, I see how that solves that, then the rest of it is relatively straightforward. But if they've not agreed that that problem actually exists, and they've not agreed at the highest level that my solution is an appropriate solution, we're probably calling a halt to it here and now, shaking hands and saying bye-bye.
Exactly. And I think the next slide, which is quite interesting, which is very pertinent, is how big is the problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is the market size? Have you done any analysis on the actual size of the problem? Who has a problem? Where do they have the problem? All of those things. And that's the market analysis piece, I think, is again what you go into. So you've defined what you ask, you've gone into your problem, you've gone into your solution, and then you show how big the problem actually is.
Mm-hmm. And then moving along from that becomes your underlying magic.
Mm.
What is it that makes you, if not uniquely, because let's be honest, most businesses are not unique in what they do and how they do it. But what is it that about your business that makes it special and makes it truly capable of delivering against that problem and delivering that solution? So for me, this is where I dig a little bit more depth into my background and the work that I've done and who I've done it with and the results that is achieved.
Definitely.
And if you're in a technology company, that might be the slide when you begin to explain at a high enough level that the person sitting opposite will understand, because remember, at those early meetings, they're not going to be technologists, they're going to be investment managers. To allow them to understand, right, I see how this actually might work. I can see that what you're doing would be better than any other option that's in the market right now.
So once you've talked about your underlying magic, the next thing you do is you talk about your business model, right? So you're talking about how do you actually make money out of this? And I think one of the things here that people underestimate or they don't really emphasize enough are all of the different ways that you can make money. So I think a lot of people are very kind of focused on, let's say, you're doing a SaaS platform as a tech thing, and you're very focused on your subscription model, right? But that just tells you how much people will pay for your product. It's not really talking about how realistic are your plans for money, right? When will your, like, how are you actually able to scale your business? And that's if you're looking for investment. But how are you making money? How realistic are your plans to make money? Is your business model scalable? And what potential issues can you see with your business model? So be honest, right? Be honest and say that.
Absolutely. And that's if you're looking for investment. For me, when I'm fixing my business for work and using this, what I'm absolutely transparent at this point in terms of my business model is, how do I expect to be remunerated for the work that I do? Very easy for me. I charge a day rate for what I do. So that's incredibly straightforward to explain. And we can address that point relatively early on in that first meeting. But the other options I have are things like either I charge a day rate, or I charge, or I receive a commission of a percentage of the growth that's achieved, or whatever way I plan to do it. Some of which will be appealing and acceptable to the other party, and others that will just be blocked again. No, I'm sorry, we would not work like that. We won't let you come in and take part of our margin out of this. You're an additional cost. Explain how that works. But this is all about working your way through a relatively brief document with an absolute clarity at the end of I understand where you are. So once you've done business model, Barab, what comes next?
Go to market, right? So how are you actually going to, so you said how you want to make money, but how are you actually going to go out there and get the customers? So I think, you know, you've described your product, you've described your solution, you've described the market, how big the opportunity is. How will you get customers? And how, again, if you're looking for investment, how quickly can you expand? And I think actually it's one of the things you and I talked about when we were looking at Avrium, right? So that business, it was talking about how can we create an initial go-to-market strategy that we can replicate across to different areas of the country or different territories or different geographies, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing. You've got to show a little bit of vision here, right? And here's what you've got to say is that, yes, I know how big the problem is. I know how my solution is going to work. And I know that people will pay for it. This is how I'm going to go and get the customers. And this is my dream. Like, this is where you really talk about where your vision actually is and how you can go there. But what I would suggest is don't be unrealistic, right? So for example, not everything, you know, not every person in the world wants your product. Don't go out there and try and tell everyone that, you know, I've got this product and 7 billion people want it, because we know that's not right.
Well, that comes back to one of those marketing podcasts that we did about understand your target audience.
Yeah.
And the more clearly that you can define it and segment it into a very particular group that you're going to have a very best solution for, the greater your opportunity for success. For those who are listening to this, not because they want a fixed debt for investment, but because they want a fixed debt to either explain their business to prospective customers, or actually, as I've had it done to me before, fix their business to me to see if I might want to join their business as an employee. That's not really a slide you need to worry too much about your go-to-market. Because if you're dealing with a prospective customer, well, they're only particularly interested in them. Next slide that I would have in my deck that we haven't even spoken about yet is, so tell me about the people who are behind this business, who are in this business. Tell me about the team. And how does it bring the skills and experience necessary to give me confidence that all that exciting stuff that you've done before, that you've explained so far, might actually come together?
And ensure that when you're writing down who's in your team, don't have a hugely, massively long bio, right? Be very to the point. Tell the person who's reading this, this is who they are, this is what they're doing, and this is why we think that they're good at doing what they're doing. Don't give, like, you know, Bayrev was 20 years experience in technology, la-di-da-di-da, right? Say Bayrev is CTO, he's got experience in fintech and whatever it is, right? And I think that's the key. You don't try and over state the team.
I absolutely building on that. I like to think about it. How would you describe a football team and the constituent parts of a football team? So you would say, Jim is the goalkeeper. His job is to stop the ball going in the net. He's got 25 years experience doing this in a Premiership club. And then Alan, no, not Alan, that's the worst example. Billy is the striker. Billy is 19, the hottest youth prospect in the country, and he is there to score the goals. Simple to that. Now I understand when they fit. Nobody is buying your business for an investment or to work with you purely on this debt. We'll touch on, well, we'll see it now. This debt is all about, okay, let's talk more. Let's have the detailed conversation about when I invest, and almost certainly they'll want your full business plan. Or if they want to work with you in a client-customer relationship, client-supplier relationship, then they'll want to know more about, tell me exactly how this works in my situation. So all of this is shortened to the point. So once we explain the team, we're beginning to wrap up, or we are now wrapping up. What's next in the date, Baron?
Well, I think we missed out on competitors, but so I would, during the market analysis, I would have, slightly before the team, I would have your competitor analysis, right? I'd have something in there that would talk about who else is in the market, how big are they, how have they grown? And you don't necessarily, like, what I would shy away from is one of those list functions, because a lot of people put into put competitors on in a slide, and they just show what all the competitors are not doing and what your product is doing. And I think anyone who's ever with a bit of brain will realize that you're going to have ticks on every single row on that table. So don't do that, because it's just pointless. What you really want to do is you want to show what are your competitors? What are their business models? How are they making money? What is their pricing? And how do you compare to that? Because if you can show that there's already demand in the market, and if you're looking for investment, then investors will say, okay, great. There's already market demand. There's already people out there doing it. Why are you different? And how can you grow when they haven't grown? So just that. I think past the team, is the financial model. And I think what I would, stress here is that everyone wants this hockey stick growth. So they also all want to, show in the second, third year that you're going to make bazillions. But again, it's not realistic, right? Make sure you put the realistic numbers in. Don't try and just show the hockey stick growth for the sake of showing hockey stick growth, because you're going to get found out pretty quickly. Make sure that you put the numbers in that make sense, that people can query, and you've thought about it, right? So when someone says, okay, how do you, you know, you expect to get 20% of the market within the first year. How are you going to do that? What is that really? What's your churn rate? What's your, you know, what's the actual customer lifetime value? All of these things. And also talk about, you know, when you're raising cash, what are you going to do with the money? And what's your cash flow? How are you going to, what happens, you know, how quickly will you run out of money? Because one of the things that a lot of investors that I talk about is that, okay, yes, you might be asking for $500,000, but what happens if I give you 2 million, right? How is that going to change your business? And I think that's something that you've got to be open to when you're
I think you raised a really good point there. And this was, it was a very good lesson to learn. It was actually much more enjoyable than I expected. But when we did our raise, and I was kind of at the heart of building out the financial model, and the investment director as part of the due diligence and the company that led the investment in us, I spent 2 days with him in his very sumptuous office in the middle of London. And I arrived thinking he's trying to find fault in everything I've done. And he immediately assured me by saying, look, Alan, we're the best one in the world. This is just a bunch of numbers. And we don't really pay a lot of attention to what the numbers are, because you can put down any number you want. What I want to understand now is, why you thought these were the right numbers to put down? Because we do sensitivity analysis. We'll half the income and double the overhead. What happens? We'll double the income and hold the same overhead. See what happens. We'll run all of that against bunches of guys in the back that are doing our own models of your model. But really, all I just want to know now is, why did you think these were the right numbers to present to us? And we went through that, and part of that for me was when he said, well, I get why you said that. That seems reasonable, right? We'll have a look at that. And there was a couple of times he said, that's a bit punchy. Or other times he said, I think you've been a bit conservative with that one. But fundamentally, the point being, at the end of the day, don't design a set of numbers because you think the investors are going to buy them. Design a set of numbers you believe in. And if you believe in them, then every likelihood it will see you through.
100%. I think a lot of time people pitch, especially to when I'm, maybe it's me, but when people pitch to me, that they just assume you're an idiot, right? And that you can't analyze the numbers for yourself.
I would presume you're an idiot.
It's true, right? People come in and go, oh yeah, we're going to make it. So they'll go from, you know, they'll quadruple their growth in the fourth year or third year, right? And you're like, okay, so you're going from 100,000 to 200,000, and then suddenly you're going to make 1.2 million, right? So how does that even, how is that going to happen? And so.
Well, I read about the book. Somebody did that one, so why can't we?
Yeah. And it says exactly as you say, it's got to be defensible, right? You have to be able to defend the numbers. And if you don't think it kind of goes back to the whole thing about spelling mistakes, right? If you sit there and try and assume that that person is just going to fully believe everything that you say, then you've lost before you even started, right? You need to be able to ensure that everything that you put into that pitch deck is believable, right? And is defensible.
Another great lesson in talking to the money man about the numbers is, if you think you're being conservative, they'll say, this is much too conservative, we think it will go much faster. And then if you think they've been quite punchy, they will say to you, this is far too ambitious, we don't think this is achievable. So there is no right answer. Just do the answer you believe in. And the final, come back to sustainability, but the final chart on my list is, at this point, show the timeline. Tell them the story of how you ended up where you are now. Show them the momentum. Show the achievements that you've made. But then also lay out the targets and the waymarks for the next 2 or 3 years. This is what we plan on doing.
A lot of companies are really bad at showing their achievements, right? So when I talk to businesses, and they might have been running for like a year or 2 years or whatever it is, but they haven't really talked about what they've done and what they've accomplished. And I think that's exactly what needs to be in this slide, right? As Alan says, I think you need to talk about what you've done, what you've achieved. Is there any kind of news in the market that will show how, you know, relevant your product or service is? And what are the key milestones that you have achieved and what you're looking to achieve, right? And what's there in the future and how are you going to achieve it? Because I think that's one of the things that people will want to know when they if you're looking for investment, right? People will want to know, okay, if you can feel that you can achieve this milestone in 6 months, are we able to achieve it quicker? And if we achieve it quicker, what does that mean for the business, right? And I think this is the key. People got to promote a lot of what they do. And I think a lot of people just assume that the person reading it or the person listening will know about your company already. Just assume nothing. No one knows anything.
You cannot assume that for a nanosecond, but also don't be too bashful.
Yeah.
You know what? Everybody that's set up, the vast majority of people have set up a business, started with next to nothing and grew out. And part of, again, underlying all of this is a human element to it. So if it is about, you know, there's a photo of you on your first day sitting at your desk and say, that's when it all began, me in my spare room at home. And then 9 months down the line, that was the first person that came on salary, came on payroll. And then that was the first customer we shipped. This all adds human involvement because, oh man, cliche after cliche, people buy people. If you're going for investment, if your investor loves you but isn't entirely convinced by the business plan, they'll work with you. If they're not entirely convinced by the business plan, but there is no personal connection, there's no chance that's moving forward. So I'm aware we've rattled on a bit today. Tell us a little bit about sustainability as part of your pitch deck.
So I think one of the things that people need to be very aware of now is that the investors are looking at sustainability and how you're actually going to incorporate that within your business. It doesn't mean that you have to be sustainable from day one, but you have to have some sort of path to sustainability. And a lot of people may not think it's relevant for them, but it's simple things like, you know, how are you going to use it? You know, electricity. It's stuff that essentially will show the investor that you're thinking about it. Because if you look at the market at the moment, companies that have sustainability as part of their some sort of kind of sustainability thoughts as part of their business plan are outperforming businesses that don't. And what you're finding from investors at the moment is that they are all very concerned about sustainability, and because it's just a demand from their investors, right? From the people putting money in, they want to know that there is some sort of path to sustainability. So if you don't really have something that is I don't know, like massively coherent in the sense that, you know, we're going to do plant a tree for every product that's bought. You know, you just got to show that you're aware of it and that you're thinking about it, because it is one of these things where people want to know especially if you're producing a product, right? Where is that product being produced? How are you going to ship it from one place to another? Is this something that is, can be grown, homegrown rather than imported, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just because of the way that the world is working at the moment and the way that people want to ensure that their money is being put to projects that aren't destroying the climate, really.
Absolutely. And one thing, it ain't going away. It's only going to become more and more and more important. So I hope you found that useful. Obviously, as I've chatted there, Barry was one more focused on developing a fixed debt to use when raising investment. My focus has been more about using the same fundamental approach to developing a fixed debt to use as a sales tool for your business, either with prospective customers or with staff, etc. But really, the core part for me, the biggest outcome I would like people to take away is, if you can't write your pitch deck, you haven't thought enough about your business. So whether you're seeking investment, whether you're actively going out to try and win a new customer or hire a new member of staff, look up Guy Kawasaki and devote a couple of hours to writing your pitch deck. If you achieve that in 2 hours, man, flooded, A star, gold star, you are top of the class, you've completely got your business nailed. But if, like the vast majority of people, you start doing it, and it begins to prompt lots of questions you haven't really thought about, that for me is the driving value at that stage in having a fixed debt to clarify your thinking.
Hope everyone's found that useful. See you next time.
Bye.
Many thanks for taking the time to listen to the podcast today. If you like what you hear, please leave a review or subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, all the main podcasting sites. And if you'd like to learn more from us, you can contact Alan. He's alan@tbgp.co.uk. And you can find me at info@atomcto.com.